Today, a scandal. How government failures allowed COVID-19 to spread through care homes. Take me back to the beginning of the COVID crisis. When this began, what were you being told to do by government?
We were never actually told to do anything by the government, which was the complicated part of this. We watched the news, as everyone did, kind of right back from mid-January. My financial director, who I work closely with Angela in the office, her fiancé Nick has lived in Spain for 30 years, so obviously she was having contact with him daily, and he was saying how horrendous things were over there, what their government were telling them to do, their instructions, their lockdown. And from looking at their numbers to looking at our numbers, Angela actually worked out that actually we're about 2.5 weeks away from what Spain were at that time, which is how we knew to get the PPE prepared. And that's how we kind of got to the thinking of doing the lockdown with the staff in the home.
What's Angela's surname?
It's Drake.
So Angela Drake at Bridgedale Care House was well ahead of the government on this.
She was massively ahead, yes, massively ahead.
What care home manager Sarah Harrison is saying is pretty extraordinary. That when the government was telling care homes to carry on as normal, a member of her staff could tell from the stories she was hearing out of Spain that COVID-19 was going to overwhelm the care sector. So in early March, they began to act. First on the 6th, when shops and restaurants and pubs were still heaving, they stopped their residents going out.
Things like church services, cafes, a lot of our relatives would take their residents home at the weekend, so we did put a stop to that.
A week later, just after 250,000 people descended on Cheltenham Festival, they asked staff to start wearing PPE and banned all visits.
This was, a very, very difficult decision to make based on no information, no guidance from any authority, really. The care homes were left to make their own mind up about what they wanted to do and what they chose to do.
And then on the 22nd of March, they locked down Bridgedale House Care Home in Sheffield entirely, with members of staff leaving their families to move in.
And on the 23rd of March, they moved in and they moved out on the 12th of May.
At no point during that entire period were care home managers like Sarah Harrison told by the government to take such drastic action to protect their residents. Since then, we have all watched in horror as COVID-19 swept through the sector, killing more than 16,000 people. In Sheffield, at Bridgedale House Care Home, there wasn't a single case. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, could the government have prevented the COVID crisis engulfing care homes? Rob Booth, social affairs correspondent at The Guardian. We've just heard from a care home manager who took a decision in mid-March to completely lock down her home. It wasn't based on government guidance, but her own understanding of the risk. If we think back to then, and I guess the start of this crisis for the UK, did ministers recognise the potential harm to care homes?
It certainly doesn't seem it. There was a huge concern early in January amongst the care providers themselves. I mean, care providers are people who are always on the lookout for infection. It's kind of part of the job. So when they were hearing about what was happening in Wuhan in January and the death toll was starting to click up there.
China is urging its citizens not to travel abroad as it struggles to contain the virus that has now killed more than 100 people.
The Care Providers Association, which represents the care providers in Britain, wanted to know what they should do. They approached the Department of Health and Social Care about it, asking, what should we do about virus spread here? And then they went back again and they were asking very pertinent questions about what should they do about isolating infected residents? Should they be restricting visits? What should they do if a staff member has symptoms? And this crucial thing about who's going to provide the personal protective equipment that we've all been talking so much about. And this was all very early on. But the government seemed sanguine about what was going to happen in care homes, and it published guidance about what care homes should do on the 25th of February, so quite a bit later now, and you know, with the pandemic moving fast around the world. And it had a relaxed tone. It said things like face masks do not need to be worn by staff. There was no mention of blocks on visits. And actually, it was very clear. It said it remains very unlikely that people receiving care in a care home will become infected, and that there was no need, I'm quoting, to do anything differently in any care setting at present. And so that was...
It said that?
It said that.
On the basis of what?
Well, on the basis, I think, and they have argued, that it wasn't in care homes at this point. And of course, you know, we don't know whether that was true. It seems very unlikely that that was true, because people were coming in and out of care homes, and the bug, as we know, incubates for a long time. And so this reassurance, I suppose, that there was no need to do anything differently in care settings at present was very surprising, I think, to many care providers used to dealing with these infections. And so lots of them started to try and make up their own protocols, really.
And one of those was Sarah, who we heard from. And I was just really interested to hear that that was partly because she herself, three members of staff in the care home, had heard about what was happening in Spain. So she was taking lessons herself from abroad. Were ministers examining what was happening elsewhere?
Yes. I mean, they could see in Spain, they could see in Italy. And one of the things that jumped out at that point was just how keen those authorities there were to put up barriers to the spread of infection. Barrier nursing is when you use full protective equipment to treat a patient who's highly infectious. And yet the advice to care homes at that point anyway was to carry on as you were.
At that time, they were defending themselves for not taking more action when it came to care homes. In fact, on the 3rd of March, Chris Whitty, the chief medical officer, said one of the things we're keen to avoid is doing things too early.
We will give some very specific advice on care homes, but one of the things we're keen to avoid, this is going back to Patrick's point at the beginning, is doing things too early. Because if you do them early, you get no benefit from the epidemic, but what you do get is a social cost. So what we want to do is give the advice at the point we think it's going to have an effect on improving the lives or reducing the chance of infection of people in their care homes. And at that point, we will give specific care home advice.
It definitely wasn't too early, was it?
Well, in fact, it wasn't too early. For some people, it was already too late. The NHS had been actively discharging patients into care homes, and outbreaks were beginning. Public Health England had started recording those outbreaks in the first weeks of March in London, Nottingham, Stockport, Thameside, and the virus was out there and it was starting to hit care homes.
As part of his reporting, Rob has spent a lot of time talking to people running care homes, including Anita Astle, who manages Wren Hall Nursing Home in Nottinghamshire. What advice were you receiving from the government?
Very little. The guidance that came out late. I think it was around about 16th or 18th of March. It was bizarre. It was totally different from anything else we'd ever received.
In what way?
Well, what we knew about infection control was that we barrier nurse, we keep people separate from everybody else. And it was saying, well, there's no need to do that. People can just remain in their own rooms. I remember reading it at home and thinking, what on earth is this? I thought, who'd written it? What knowledge base did they have? And I just thought, this is ludicrous. So initially we thought, right, we'll follow it, but it became very apparent that it wasn't adequate. And so then we stepped up and started using other guidance and tightening our infection control and prevention procedures.
What other guidance were you looking at?
I'd been contacted by a gentleman called Eric Fuster. He'd had lots of experience of working with people with Ebola, SARS and MERS, so highly contagious diseases. And he'd seen me speaking to the media. He was saying, if you follow the government guidance, you're never going to get rid of COVID. So we started to follow his guidance, which was around zoning and cohorting.
That meant splitting the home into three zones, red for isolation, amber for those at risk, and a safer green area, as well as keeping people within set groups and limiting any interaction with others.
I mean, it's pretty extraordinary that you've got this guidance from the government that you feel uneasy about. Somebody watches you doing interviews on the media and comes to you with guidance which is 10 times better.
Yeah, and I hope that there's a public inquiry that highlights this and says mistakes were made. I mean, it's not about apportioning blame, but it is about learning from past experience and making sure that we don't make the same mistakes again.
That was early March, and it's now coming towards the end of May. We all know that things have changed immeasurably during that time. For you, Rob, as our social affairs correspondent, a lot of your focus has been on care homes. Tell me what you've seen unfold in the last 2 months.
Well, I think that 2 months, you can pretty much divide it in half. There was a period when there was very little information coming out about what was happening in care homes. All the focus was on what was going on in the NHS. All the data was coming out about what was happening in hospitals. And so it was impossible to actually know how many people were infected in care homes and were dying in care homes unless you did a ring round. And that's basically what we were doing all the time, which was calling the care homes, speaking to care home managers, calling the operators, and they were starting to gather data. In fact, when we were publishing figures about how many people were dying in care homes, they were way ahead of any kind of official estimates at that point, because the government's transparency on care homes was very limited. And then there came a sort of tipping point halfway through that period of 2.5 months when suddenly it seemed like care homes were the front line.
A third of all deaths linked to coronavirus in England and Wales are now happening in care homes, according to the latest figures.
Even from the outside, it's not hard to spot the emergency in our care homes. Within minutes of us arriving at this one in Suffolk, another resident requires an ambulance.
I'd say to all those people working in care homes up and down the country, you know, whether it's the people in them, whether it's the people looking after them, you've absolutely not been forgotten.
It became a big issue in Parliament.
What's causing the continued delay in routine testing in our care homes?
Already, 125,000 care home staff have been tested. 118,000, perhaps he didn't know that, Mr. Speaker, 118,000 care home workers have been tested.
Everybody started thinking about what was happening in these places, and finally, the figures started coming out, and you could see the accelerating death toll. I spoke to one where 27 people died, one single nursing home, and the government was always playing catch-up.
27 people. Tell me about that conversation. Who was it with? How did they feel?
It was a nursing home in West London, and it had swept through in, you know, just 3 weeks, the bug, and it was out of control. And the strain and the exhaustion for the manager in charge of that home was just palpable when I was speaking to her. There were some incredible characters in there, and what happened in places like that, and it's been replicated across the country, has just been so tough for many people to deal with.
Obviously, the health service is devolved in the UK. So a lot of what you're talking about will have applied to England. What's the situation in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland?
Scotland has had over 3,500 deaths in care homes, outbreaks in 59% of care homes, which is higher than in England. The Wales figures are taken in with the English figures, and there's also been small outbreaks in Northern Ireland where there's been about 70 deaths.
Looking at this now, how badly have things gone wrong in care homes?
What's happened in care homes looks to me like it's the biggest failure, perhaps, of the coronavirus crisis in Britain. And if it comes to a public inquiry, and it almost certainly will, it's surely going to occupy the panel of any inquiry more than any other topic.
Anita, it's been now more than 2 months since that early period when you were desperately trying to work out what to do. Tell me what has happened in your care home.
On the 23rd of March, we were informed that one of our gentleman that was in hospital tested positive to COVID-19. He'd been admitted to hospital 7 days before. The next day, we had two ladies in the care home start to show symptoms. So we started to isolate those two ladies. And then over the next 2 weeks, we had 16 people that were identified as showing symptoms. And then thereafter, there was one or two people every 2 or 3 days becoming symptomatic. So by this time, we'd zoned, we're cohorting, but we're still getting new cases of COVID-19 symptoms being shown. And so we were quite alarmed, saying that what we were doing wasn't enough. What else could we do?
Were you getting help from the government?
No, none. We had phone calls from our infection prevention and control colleagues, but in terms of guidance and advice, we weren't being given anything that we didn't already know.
How many people did you lose?
13.
Coming up, Rob investigates how the government got this so wrong. But first, you're going to get bored of hearing this, but there is only one way that we could have a chance in the British Podcast Awards Listener's Choice category, and that is with your help. It takes a huge effort by the Today in Focus producers and our journalists across The Guardian to make this podcast, and we hope you enjoy it and would really appreciate any votes. It only takes a minute. Go to britishpodcastawards.com/vote. Rob, let's talk about where the government got things wrong. You've been investigating the key mistakes along the way, and I want to go through those one by one. Arguably, the first one was the decision to discharge people from hospitals where there may have been infection into care homes. Why did they do that?
Firstly, because they were desperate to create space in NHS hospitals. There were reports coming out of Italy showing a health system that was overwhelmed by critical cases of COVID-19. So they wanted to create these 15,000 spaces. And also they'd calculated that care homes themselves were good places to look after COVID-positive patients, that there was sufficient capacity in those care homes to isolate people and that everything would be okay. And it wasn't. First of all, care homes are not places where it's necessarily easy to isolate staff. They're designed communally. They are full of people who suffer dementia. And one of the common symptoms of dementia is being hypermobile and wanting to move around. Plus, of course, there was no ban on visits early on in March, which surprised a lot of people. And care workers themselves were coming and going, and the care system uses lots and lots of agency staff as well. And so they were not just coming and going to work and coming through the community. They were going from care home to care home. And we know, in fact, that agency staff like that spread the bug.
So basically, they almost misunderstood the fact that care homes are built for communal living. Instead of doing what they were doing, should they have been following what some care homes were doing independently and locking them down completely much earlier on?
You could see actually the tension in how the government wanted to treat care homes in the guidelines about discharging patients from hospital that they set out on the 2nd of April. In those guidelines, they said that people with either symptomatic or non-symptomatic COVID-19, and I'm quoting, can be safely cared for in a care home. That was their view. But also they stressed in that guidance, and it was very sort of non-technical language, they were saying that making beds available was part of, quote, the national effort. It's kind of wartime language, isn't it? And it will help save thousands of lives. So there's a lot of pressure on them to do that.
I mean, hang on for a second. I just almost can't believe what I'm hearing. It wasn't just that they allow people to go back to care homes to free up space in the NHS. They told care homes that they were going to send people who they knew could be COVID positive for them to look after. And these were elderly people and vulnerable people. Why wouldn't they keep them in hospitals?
Well, clearly they felt that they needed space. And the second thing, their view was that if they were recovering from COVID, they should be going somewhere to recover. A critical care bed or an acute hospital ward is not the place for them. But in other countries, it wasn't happening like that. There was a much stronger approach to quarantining people who'd been suffering from COVID-19 before they went into care homes. We took a different view, which was that care homes, it seemed, would be a repository of people who weren't requiring a critical care, regardless of whether they might be infectious or not.
Okay, so it seems obvious as you're describing this now that that wasn't a very good idea. But it wasn't just the fact that they sent people back to care homes, was it? It was the way in which they did it, their failure to test people.
Yeah, this is absolutely critical, and this is where the story is right now. If you go back to the 12th of March, when the pandemic was taking off, the government decided to stop testing for COVID-19 in the community. This is another example of it focusing its efforts on the NHS and that part of the health system. And so at a time when the care homes wanted to know much more about who was infected, they suddenly knew less. And there was information coming out of international studies in March saying that there was a lot of asymptomatic transmission going on. If you didn't track that by testing and knowing who had COVID but without symptoms, it was like being completely in the dark for the care home managers. They didn't know what was happening in their care homes, but what they did know is that people were falling ill very quickly. Their symptoms would go up and down, and then before you know it, many of them would pass away. It was shocking.
How bad was the situation with PPE?
I mean, early on, the story with PPE was that everything was going to the NHS, so it became very hard for care homes to get what they felt they needed. There was a sort of national stockpile. That was basically one consignment of 300 of the paper masks. Look, for example, at Anita Astle's care home, Wren Hall in Nottinghamshire, where they were getting through 400 masks a day.
These are not reusable masks?
No, it's just those little paper ones.
It's amazing. Mm.
So they were ploughing through this kind of kit, and actually they needed more than that. They needed the high protection masks to stop the virus spreading through aerosol generating procedures, you know, when they were helping people with their breathing. They didn't have any gowns, they didn't have any visors.
Over the country?
Yeah.
To what extent do we know that lack of PPE put carers' lives at risk?
Well, one of the things, sadly, that we do know is that care workers, according to the official statistics, are in a group that is twice as likely to die from COVID-19 as people working in the NHS. And we know certainly that at least a dozen care workers who've died, and that's just from picking up reports and so on as they've been announced, so there are no doubt more than that.
Anita, we've just heard from Rob about a litany of very specific failures. When it came to care homes, not just a failure to bring in a lockdown early enough, but sending patients from hospitals to care homes without tests, a failure to protect people like yourself and your staff, at least a dozen carers have died from COVID. Given everything that we've seen, how do you feel about the situation now, and do you expect anything to change?
So I think there's a lot that I've learned. One of the things is don't be reliant on government or Department of Health and Social Care. Use my knowledge base and experience and plan accordingly should there be a second wave.
Rob, it didn't have to be like this, did it? Not only were there clear warnings about what might happen to the care sector from Europe, but there were already lessons that could be learned by the action that other countries were taking. For example, there wasn't a single COVID death in a care home in Hong Kong. Do you understand why?
It was really interesting to hear from an academic called Professor Terry Lum of Hong Kong University, who explained that the key thing that they did was prevent transmission from hospitals. So anyone COVID positive was being isolated in hospital for 3 months, he said. He was describing this to MPs last week. And that close contacts would be isolated for 14 days and regularly tested.
We even use supercomputer to trace the close contact of people being infected, particularly for a cluster outbreak.
Every care home had a coordinator who was responsible for infection and being trained in infection control. And they would have annual drills to imagine in care homes what you would be doing, like a fire drill, I guess, if an infection struck. And what this stemmed from, of course, was SARS in 2003, where dozens of people did die in Hong Kong of that infection. And it gave people in Hong Kong this very high sense of vulnerability. When something like this comes on the horizon, the people of Hong Kong knew, not just the health authorities, the people of Hong Kong knew what the risk could be. And as a result, they came out of the gate very, very quickly. So by late January, 70% of the entire population, they reckon, were wearing face masks. And by early February, so way before we did this in care homes, they stopped all outside visits into care homes. So they clamped down super fast. And one of the consequences of that, not just that they had zero deaths in care homes, but that they've managed to come out of it more quickly. And they've got back to activities in care homes with care and with distancing in early April. So normality has returned a lot quicker too. So there's a kind of extra layer of cost to us, going slowly, as if we remember what Chris Whitty was saying, not wanting to do things too quickly, which is that we're still in this in care homes and it's going to last for quite a while longer. And the fear at the moment in care homes is the testing still isn't happening. They still don't know what is in their midst in terms of infection.
Having completed this investigation, having spent the last 2.5 months embroiled in this story, how do you now feel about the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, saying that the government put a protective ring around care homes?
It was rhetoric intended to reassure the population that flew in the face of the facts.
That was Rob Booth, The Guardian's social affairs correspondent, Anita Astle, who runs Wren Hall Nursing Home in Nottinghamshire, and Sarah Harrison, manager of Bridgedale House Care Home in Sheffield. We went to the Department of Health and Social Care about this episode, and a spokesperson said, "We have been working tirelessly with the care sector to reduce transmission and save lives, and have based all our decisions on the latest scientific and clinical advice. As a result, nearly 2/3 of care homes have had no outbreak at all." They said they were determined to ensure that residents and staff were not put at risk, with patients requiring a test before being discharged into a care home. And they said that no home would be forced to take recovering COVID-19 patients if they didn't feel that they could prevent the spread of the virus. They also said they were providing an extra £600 million for infection control measures in care homes, along with a £3.2 billion fund for local councils to deal with COVID-19, although, as we know, that does include other things, including money to help house rough sleepers. Rob Booth has covered this crisis from the start, writing several excellent pieces. Do go to theguardian.com to have a look. He's also just finished an investigation into what went wrong that will be published soon, so do look out for that. There are two episodes of Today in Focus I'd also like to point you to. One is called The Story of One Care Home Hit by Coronavirus, in which manager Julie Roche gave a heartbreaking account of what happened in Westbury Grange Care Home in Buckinghamshire. And we also spoke to Sarah Jane Clark, one of the carers in Sarah Harrison's nursing home, who moved in away from her family and fiancé to protect the residents. She is featured in How COVID-19 Brought Britain Back Together, Stories of Altruism and a much-needed dose of positivity in the middle of all of this. That's it for today. A huge thanks to Sarah Harrison, Anita Astle and Rob Booth. This episode was produced by Courtney Youssef. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.